so, moved by Counselor Haskins, second by Counselor Zulak. Be resolved that council appropriation of the township of McKellar is hereby reconvened into regular open session of council at
6:33.
6:33 PM. All in question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 25-261, moved by Counselor Keckin, second by Counselor Ryland. Be resolved that council of the corporation of the township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held June 17, 2025. All question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Back into open session, so we'll have roll call once again.
Counselor Morley Haskins.
Counselor Debbie Zulak.
Counselor Nick Ryland.
Counselor Mike Heckman.
Clerk Administrator Carly Brady. Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Fire Chief Robert Morrison.
Mayor David Bourne. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they've carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. I move the agenda. Yeah, so we've moved 21.1, the bylaw, to discuss that, but we have the fire chief here to explain why we're looking for a change. So, Rob, it's all yours.
My understanding is that we are amending the bylaw from the copy that I have. It just include Canada Day now, I believe.
That can be a discussion that council has. So, if
okay.
You want to.
All right, sorry. So, we. It came to our attention that through various inquiries from various parties who wanted to host fireworks on June 28th, that the date fell outside of what our bylaw considered allowable because Canada Day, being one of the solid holidays of the year, it's sometimes on Tuesday or Wednesday, and it doesn't fit in that two-day window that we offer in the old fireworks bylaw. So, in order to prevent people from accidentally, you know, circumventing the bylaw and breaking it, it was suggested that perhaps we move the Canada Day holiday to say the weekend before or the weekend after, so that there was always a time that somebody could do it, and not necessarily having to be on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay.
Just for ease of use, just to help people make it easier to understand and more user-friendly.
Yeah, the Canada Day, and I noticed, because that one falls on different days of the week, right?
Yes,
and,
correct.
And I'm looking at some of those others that do as well. They're moving around. They don't always fall on the Monday, for instance. So I'm wondering, I mean, that would certainly take care of Canada Day. Does it take care of some of the other days?
It would take care of Canada Day. We could keep it the way it was originally written, was that it would be the weekend before or after.
Right.
However, if we, like, for instance, Victoria Day. Victoria Day is a Monday. It's always a Monday. So 2 days before is not an issue, correct?
Right.
Labor Day is always a Monday. You know, most of the things that we have out there, that except for New Year's Eve, let's say, right, or Christmas, they are movable holidays that are just given on the third Monday of every month or something like that. So I would feel like listing day, listing New Year's Eve would be the two prudent days that we would offer as a before and after for fireworks celebrations, and then the rest of them can likely be kept the way it is.
I'm trying to find that list there. Is looking at other days that move around there. Not that they're fireworks necessarily, but they were covered at the time. Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we don't typically celebrate Thanksgiving or Christmas with fireworks. I mean, you might.
Casey, are you all right with that, those two particular dates or events?
Yes. Yeah, I think that'd be great. Canada Day and New Year's would, I think that would cover it.
That's okay.
Okay, so the way that this is written is the way that we're adopting the bylaw?
Well, we can certainly make amendments to it. That's what we're doing right now, discussing.
Because, you know, as we've referenced, looking at the previous version of the bylaw, 2019-22, it is written quite differently. It says the 2 days immediately preceding and or following each of the above days, unless a fireworks permit has been issued in accordance with this bylaw. So exactly as you say, the proposed wording, fireworks may also be discharged on the Saturday and Sunday immediately before or after any of the above dates. It really extends it for, say, Victoria Day. So now you can have fireworks on the 17th, 18th, Victoria Day is on the 19th, you can have on the 24th and the 25th, which is not even close to being Victoria Day. Canada Day is on Tuesday, July 1st. So with this, you will be having, you'll have to have fireworks on the 29th and the 30th, and on July 5th and 6th. So I think that we need to be a little more specific, because it certainly puts things out of kilter significantly from what the intent of the bylaw is. And you can go through the entire list, even though some of these are not well-known fireworks days, such as Good Friday, once again, it falls on the 18th, and so you can have fireworks the way that this is proposed on the 12th, 13th, and the 19th, and the 20th.
Yeah, it's quite a space in between, and people are wondering, what are you celebrating? Well, it was last week. So, so the solution that they're offering is to keep the weekends in there for the two, for New Year's and for Canada, keep the others the way it was, 2 days before or after. Sort of.
Absolutely, that's correct.
And lose the Saturday or Sunday? Or in addition to the Saturday and Sunday?
So the way it's written right now, the two days preceding and following would go with every holiday. My proposal is that for the time being, we make a quick amendment that changes the bylaw to allow for the 2 days before, immediately preceding or following the above days, go for everything in the list minus New Year's Day and Canada Day. Canada Day and New Year's Day will be the weekend preceding and following. Everything else will stay the same. I would like to bring this back to council in the fall after the busy season with a couple other amendments that I would like to make. There are holidays which are becoming more and more important to people in townships, such as Diwali, that should be listed in here and so forth. So there are a couple other changes that will eventually be made, but at least if we make this change now, we're not going to have 15 calls to bylaw for people who have broken the bylaw for Canada Day celebrations on the 28th.
And you don't think we'll get to the point where the exceptions are no fireworks and on certain days, and most days are fireworks available?
Well, I mean, it's still the basis of the bylaw restricting fireworks during high and extreme,
right,
are still there. So we can make this amendment, and then 3 days from now, Mother Nature could have other ideas and decide to put us at a high.
Yeah.
And that will unfortunately put an end to the fireworks celebrations as is. So
yeah, it's a difficult one even for our bylaw enforcement to enforce.
100%.
But the time the person gets there, if they attend at that point, they're done,
yeah,
usually.
For the most part.
Yeah. So is council okay with that? I don't know whether you want to fix this up, but we can't really leave it too much longer, because we're talking July 1st, and our next meeting is not until July 2nd. So.
No, that's fine. So we'll just delete Canada Day and New Year's Day, and that's not a problem.
But they still need a separate clause, right?
Correct. So for Canada Day and New Year's Day, the day observed, fireworks can be discharged, as well as on the Saturday and Sunday immediately before or after those dates.
Okay.
So what we have here, the proposed, it doesn't have the previous that says 2 days immediately preceding, so or okay, so that okay, that's Saturday sign before. So we have to have that other wording from the previous bylaw added for these other days. So what I have here. 2 days immediately preceding.
Okay, any further questions?
No, I think that will satisfy a lot of people. The weekend coming up, and when we talk about further amendments in the fall, I have a couple of notes that we can probably deal with at that time. I could touch on it briefly, but kind of when I read the bylaw, it's almost like a no permit is required for consumer fireworks, kind of in my reading, but whether I'm interpreting wrong,
it's
or
so. I agree with you. That's definitely the way it reads. We're familiar with the intention of the bylaw, and so part of one of the things that I want to bring up in the fall is that, you know, our burning bylaw clearly states that there's absolutely no open air burning on township lands, but we don't necessarily restrict it on fireworks, which is you're saying you're lighting explosives, but that's okay on township lands, right? So and yet the fireworks bylaw says that if you're using township lands, you have to have insurance and liability coverage and some $5 million. But if I don't require a permit, how is anybody going to know? So if you want to hold a family function at Minerva Park and you want to set up fireworks, and we've decided as a group that we're going to allow people to do that for a special occasion or for some, you know, or for a holiday or whatever, having a permit in place for consumer fireworks on public property, not private property, on public property, at least affords me the opportunity to have a discussion with them to say, okay, make sure you have methods of extinguishment, make sure you abide by the fire danger rating, make sure you have insurance, because on township property, I mean, what if they burn down the gazebo in Minerva Park, right? Or you know, a house beside the ball diamond or something like that. So at least it affords me the opportunity to have some communication with people. They have to come to me first to get permission for that.
Yeah.
So no interest in charging for a permit, no interest in doing anything like that. Again, everything's going to stay the way it is, but at least it forces a communication.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. That deserves further talking about in the fall, I believe, and maybe we can determine when something's on township property, yeah, what requirements there are, you know. And I would almost lean toward, even if it is consumers fireworks, that yes, a permit maybe if it is on township property with certain conditions. I think what we ran into and what was happening in Broadbent was the one item of a person needing a certification for setting off fireworks. The intention was for myself and a couple others to get it. Well, I still attempted again yesterday and just run into nothing but roadblocks kind of thing. So otherwise we would have had it. So Rob was kind of thinking it would be nice if one of you fellows had it, but we don't. But and even Carly, at a meeting you did say, well, it's not a really a requirement. So, you know, go ahead kind of thing. But if we can spell it out clear in the future.
Let's clear it up. Let's make sure
yeah.
It's easy to understand that way. This from this year forward,
yeah.
You know, it's easy to abide by.
Because arguing with Rob, he seems to win most of the time. So I'd rather not get into that again.
We didn't. No arguing.
Okay. Clear. Great. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob.
Carly, if you can send me a copy of that
one, I will.
I'll put it on social.
We have resolution 25-262, moved by Councilor Riley, Councilor Peckman, be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby give bylaw number 2025-34, being a bylaw to amend bylaw. resolution 25-263 back onto number 12 on the agenda. Moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskin. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby move into committee the whole at
6:49 p.m.
to continue discussions and review of the draft fees and charges bylaw. Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. Okay, you've highlighted the changes that came out of our last one. Is there anything in this that we should be looking at?
So you can see within the first page of the bylaw, we need additions for severability, conflict with any other bylaw in review. Within the schedules, I did add Schedule J signage as a separate schedule and also included vendor fees for the McKellar Market because those were missed last go around. And then all the other suggestions for council were also implemented, including Minerva Park as a venue to be rented. I was looking at other municipalities, and it was kind of hard to find rates similar. I got this one from Township of Sieg when they referenced the Humphrey Field grounds with those rates, so that's where I got those from. Some refundable additions were made. Note under waste disposal, so this bylaw addresses fees and charges only for information on what materials are accepted or not accepted at the township's transfer station. It's referring them to the current transfer station bylaw. And then adding the note that there's a no charge collection period for leaves during certain times throughout the year. Other additions are within the planning schedule, just clarifying the parkland dedication fees are 5% or 2% of the current market value, and market value is defined below as the current market value determined by either an accredited appraiser or by a licensed realtor by means of a letter of opinion, clearing that up for staff issuing parkland fees. In terms of...
Welcome back.
For a cemetery, the monuments over 4 feet were deleted. Schedule G for fire department. So a note has been added to the bottom that fines and penalties are set out within the specific bylaw related to the infractions, such as the burning bylaw or fireworks bylaw, and are not included in this fees and charges bylaw. So this fees and charges bylaw is for the purpose of issuing a fee with regards to a charge for these specific departments, not for issuing fines. So that's been defined. Under municipal recovery rates for public works, it's been referenced that the current rate is as per the Ontario Provincial Standard Specification, so the OPS is Provincial 127. And then the signage bylaw is more in one spot and is saying the different types of signs, and then lastly, the McKellar Market rates.
Okay, thank you. Councilor Keck.
I think that regarding this is page 6 of 16, the refrigeration equipment. I think it should make it very clear that without the notice attached, not accepted, because all people see is no charge. And it is provincial legislation. I think it needs to be very clear, and there can't be any ability for someone not to understand that it's not accepted if it doesn't have the notice.
My apologies, I missed that one.
So in facility rentals, where it's got hall full day, hall half day, maximum 4 hours, when they did they sign a contract?
Yes.
So will it have the exact time, like from what time till what time?
So currently, we can add that in. So within
so
the contract, it does say when the hall rental starts and when they should be concluded.
Okay. And then over, like we discussed before, will there be a penalty?
I can add that, yes. And did you have a recommendation as to what type of fee to, or like what charge?
I was thinking like $400 or something. Yeah, like so people don't do it.
Right. So do we give them like a 15-minute grace period?
What does council think?
Well, I'm thinking about the previous problem we had that I think it has to be spelled out that we'll lose at least part of the deposit, if not all of it. For, you know, it's not just a damage deposit, it's not, maybe that's what it's called now. So we might have to change the name of that to include more things.
Yeah. So you could lose 50% of your damage deposit if you run over time?
Yeah, because I think it has to be substantial so people don't just, you know, oh well.
Or even an hourly rate per hour? Would that be easier or just make it a flat rate? I guess flat rate would probably be easier, right?
Yes.
Than bickering over what time the person actually did. It's just strictly boom.
And like I said, do we give them 15 minutes to half an hour grace period before we would do that charge? Or if somebody's rushing out the door, right, and they're 5 or 10 minutes?
Yeah, well, I think common sense, right?
Common sense, because nobody's using the hall afterwards. It's doing no harm. It's when somebody else is scheduled to come in right away.
Yep.
Then.
So with those half days, then a lot of times for something like that, they have check-in time or check-out time at 11:30, check-in time 12 o'clock. So you have this buffer so that nothing.
Not bang bang, like at least half an hour between bookings or something.
Whatever the amount of time.
I'm sure that doesn't come up.
Yeah,
much.
So like if they want to book it for 4 hours, that half hour before the next one is booked. Right? I think that would work.
Is there space between all our events that go on in the hall now? Or is there something that is colliding?
Yeah, we usually don't have, we have AGMs for, say, the Tate's Island Association, which is in the morning. So they'll be in there at 8:30 in the morning. They're usually done by noon. And if someone books the afternoon, then we let them know. Sorry. That they have to be out. And we've never had any problems before. And then we won't book the next person until 1 o'clock, so that gives them an hour between
to clean up.
Okay.
Clean up.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of times that two things are booked on the same day, like half day things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just noticing at the start there too, we reference 391, section 391 of the Municipal Act, and I know that covers most of it, but I noticed that there's another one that might cover in more detail things that we might be considering. It's actually in the legislation. I wonder if we should quote the entire section of 391.1. It's only a couple more lines, but it covers all the things we could be charging for.
Mm-hmm.
I have a copy over there. And I come across, I'd have to check on this one, 2013-06 as a bylaw. I noticed quite a list there that are being repealed. 2013-06 might have been listing again the rates and updating them. But we'd have to check to see if that should be added to it.
Good. In case we're not covering all the
just say all that.
repeal those and all previous bylaws. What that has to do is that's something that should be a habit for a lot of things.
The only thing you have to be careful of, if there's something in the bylaw that you wanted to keep and you suddenly repeal it, like we found that out just recently with repealed all of them and had overlooked that one, I guess, so that's one they should have kept. And so that's if you repeal all that deal with the fees and charges on the little word.
Yeah, that's a good point.
This bylaw does say the event of any conflict between any provisions of these bylaws, and this one prevails, so we're
okay,
there.
Yeah, that covers it there too, huh? Okay.
Can I ask a practical question? Is there any way for us to know, or Roshan to know, how much that we collect on, maybe not on a given line, in the categories that are mentioned in this? In other words, if you
picked up on the mic.
Sorry, I took it off. So my question is there a way to know how much money we collect and or the volume of things? And for example, if we were to say that everything under the facilities line items, is there a GL for that would tell us that, as distinct from other categories that are mentioned in here?
Yes, yeah. Some
okay.
are specific and some are not, but...
Okay, well, that's good. I'm not asking for it now or anything like that. I'm just thinking that maybe on an annual basis it would be worthwhile to look at that and see how much money are we getting from that and how significant is it, because we could spend a lot of time on something we don't collect very often, and you got to wonder if that's a good use of time. But anyway, and it's no complaint about what we're doing here. I just started thinking those things through. So,
yeah, our line item for revenue for the community center is, in my view, low, and that's kind of why we're visiting these figures, because I think we've sat on too long without no increases. I think we got to start trying to keep updated on it. So
you'll remember that when we do the hall rentals and give them for free?
I know, it's a thin line between charging and it being a community center.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a lot of groups enjoy the community center. Yeah, so it's a fine line there.
So regarding rink rentals, no private winter rentals unless township approved, is that something that comes before the council, or?
It should.
So, I guess we need to see the facility and rentals forms just to see how that if that's worded in the form.
Discussion areas. And you cross reference with the cemetery bylaw that we're considering now. Look at the rates here. Okay.
Yes, if we decide to change any fees, well, it might happen every year if we review it. It's no problem to do a bylaw amendment every year. That's how time consuming is that?
I would just repeal the previous and then put out a new bylaw and not do amendments, just because they can get tricky with staff determining which
that's
one
right.
is actually current.
Okay. And just curious, time, if council decide, oh, we want to jam up the rates at the market or something like that, or she requested or something, how much time does that take staff time?
So now that this document is built, it shouldn't take too long, and I would recommend doing it at the beginning of the year. In the event that Jan wants to raise her prices, then she has adequate notice for the summer markets, and then it kind of coincides with budget discussions as well. So we'd be looking to bring this at either a meeting in January or February each year.
Right. Yeah, it could be part of budget discussions, and then if there are changes, do all the changes at once,
mm-hmm.
So it's not...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All the legwork's been done with this, so now it won't take as much time to update everything.
A few hours, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
from memory, I believe that Jen did change your fees for this year. You were starting soon, like.
She did. So
yeah.
Those rates are reflected in Schedule K.
Okay. Okay.
Any further comments from council?
Like to say thank you for all the work it takes to do this. I'm sure it was not small at all, but it's useful. And again, if we put this in the context of a budget discussion where we're looking at revenues, then I think that's a great thing to have done slash started at least and cover that. And maybe we could break it down into components and try and do a component a month kind of thing. I don't know. That's just me blue skying, but it would seem to make it more manageable, because it wouldn't want this to become a monster that somebody has to carry around for a whole year to try and fix. But
yeah, as suggestions come up for fee increases,
sure.
Like we can kind of keep this in a draft form throughout the year and then present it to council at the beginning of the year. So if the market manager is looking to increase their prices next year, but she already knows at the end of this market season she wants to do that, she can bring that to me prior to.
Sure. Will we publish this on our webpage?
Yes, so now that council's kind of formalized the document and there's just a few changes left, we can post notice that we're intending on passing a new fees and charges bylaw in July 2nd, just so the public's aware. And then it also gives a hard date for staff to know that on July 3rd that all the new fees are in place, and it gives the public a bit of a notice period since it does affect them.
Okay. So how does it apply for the notice period required for the building department and having a public meeting regarding changes of building permit fees?
That's correct. So I'll have to speak to the CBO, because you're right, and there's another bylaw that needs to be passed, the building bylaw. So I'll look to see what those dates line up, and then we'll schedule the passing of the fees and charges bylaw to correlate with those bylaws to ensure that proper notice is given with the building department.
And the public meeting required under the building act?
Yes.
Now the figures that are into the cemetery bylaw that are in here, I know the cemetery bylaw might take, 6 months to be approved by the registrar. Hopefully it won't take that long, but so if we say these are the rates, does the registrar ever step in and say that, you know, it's too high, too low?
No, because our rates are reflective of what the registrar recommends. So since 2021, there has been a change in the tariff rates that the treasurer brought forward. So we're okay with passing this bylaw with the rates of tariff in place for the cemeteries.
Okay. It just gets a little confusing because somebody else approves it and it takes time. We post it, but it really hasn't. It's not in effect. I guess the old one stays in effect until the new one is approved.
Do you get complaints about the existing fees and charges? I'm
no.
Sure you do. No, not really. Okay. Well, that's good. Good to know.
Comments usually are, oh, you have really good prices. So
what's that?
Comments are the opposite. You have really good prices for your facility rentals. So
okay.
I think that's a sign to increase them.
So we can make them change their opinion.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple complaints.
Now, as committee of the whole, I want to open up to the public as well. If there are any comments online or in person? Okay, so you're aiming at July 2nd?
Yes. We'll see if a public meeting for the building can coincide with that, and if not, it'll be the second meeting in July.
Resolution 25-264, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby rise and report to the Committee of the Whole at
7:08 p.m.
Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to 14 on the agenda, Resolution 25-265. Moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve the minutes of the June 3rd, 2025 regular meeting of Council and the June 6, 2025 special meeting of council as circulated. Discussion of those minutes. Call a question, all in favor? None opposed, carried. On to 15 on the agenda, resolution 25-266, moved by Councilor Pickman, seconded by Councilor Ryland. The result of the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the zoning bylaw amendment application submitted by Christopher Moffitt, proposing to rezone the property located at 70 Burnett's Road from Waterfront Residential 2, WF2, to Rural RU, as required by consent application number B05/2024, Moffitt, and further that Council deems the application to be complete in accordance with the requirements of the Planning Act. I had a bit of a concern with this one, and I know at one point with the original application in April of 2024, they were going to go with the 10 meter wide driveway. We asked for the 20 meter, and so by doing that, they went to the 20. I have the feeling that they've taken the property off the wrong lot, because now you've got a retained lot that doesn't meet the township requirements. It's only 57 meters and it has to be 60. And we ran into that before too. It didn't get to the OLT, but when somebody was asking to have 50 meter for, and this is awfully close, 57. So I'm thinking, rather, it just looks to me like they've taken off the retained, when they should have taken off more of the severed, so that they could get the full width requirements. It'd be the road front here that would be counted, and it's only 57 meters. And the thing that's confusing, when you look at the previous application, and this is where I'm a little concerned about it, this is a year ago, they're saying part one, which is a retained, has a depth of 214 meters, whereas their application that came out a year ago said it was 243. Now the depth shouldn't be changing an awful lot because of what they're doing. And similarly, part three, which would be the severed piece, they got down as 213 meters depth, yet in the original application it was 243 meters depth. So we're sitting here trying to make a call on which one's correct. Similarly, part one, the retained, in the original was 2.5 hectare area. I can see why it'd be a bit less now because I've taken the chunk out for the driveway. But the one that doesn't make any sense is part three, the severed piece, is now 3.4 hectare. The original was 3.2. I don't know how it gained in size. So it's just that the figures aren't consistent, which makes me question the accuracy, I guess, of the figures that were being given. But the main one is that the 57 meters now doesn't meet the required standard. So I don't know whether that would, I would say probably the application is not complete. That I maybe suggest a deferral until we get that straightened out. I don't know what his timeline is in meeting this requirement. I don't know whether Patrick said it.
No, and if it's unable to meet the requirement, there could be a special provision to allow the 57 meters within the rezoning, I can have that discussion with the applicant.
Yeah, it'd be a big concern. He's a lot of land to play with here, and I'm not sure if we want to get into an exception. And we held firm on the other one that it'd be the 60 meters. And even at that, we've been told that that's generous, 60-meter frontage in our township compared to other townships. Whitestone's 100, I think. So if we start reducing, making an exception, I think that's probably just leaving us open for precedent. Especially when he has the property that he just has to move the boundary line. Any other comments from council on that? Resolution on the table. Councilor Kevin and second by Councilor Ryland. Put it to a vote, or do you have to defer to get those straightened out?
Defer, I guess.
Okay, call the question then for a deferral. All those in favor? None opposed? On to 16. Resolution 25-267, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Hassan. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the March 24th, 2025, and April 28th, 2025 meetings of the Parry Sound Area Planning Board. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 25-268, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the January 9th, 2025, February 13th, 2025, and April 10th, 2025 meetings of the District of Parry Sound Social Services Administration Board. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? On to 17.1, we have resolution 25-269, moved by Councilor Hassan, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives report admin-2025-07, Nicholson Parry Sound Student Transportation Services, transfer site agreement from Clerk Administrator Carly Britton. Further, the Council authorizes the Clerk Administrator and the Mayor to execute the agreement, thereby entering into a 3-year term with Nicholson Parry Sound Student Transportation Services for a school bus transfer site located at Minerva Park. Carl wants to give a little background on this. I think you have already, but just the highlights.
So the Nipissing Parry Sound Student Transportation Services are planning their routes for September 2025 school year. They were asking for a transfer site agreement. Historically, they've used Highway 124 and West Road, that traffic island. Arguably, that's not the safest spot for children to be exiting and entering onto school buses with the highway right there. So Minerva Park was looked at as a second option, being a bit off the highway and much safer. In speaking with the Public Works Superintendent, the operations crew is able to reroute their schedules so that the park is plowed for when the buses arrive and then when they come back in the afternoon. And speaking with Chuck at the consortium, the agreement that you see before you is very similar to the one that is executed between the Town of Parry Sound using the Kinsman Park as their transfer student site. So it's recommended that this spot be a more safe area for students, and also that the consortium does have adequate insurance to facilitate this transfer site.
Okay, Council.
Do you know if this is related in any way to the new super school, or I can't remember exactly what it's called, in other words, the high school?
I'm unsure at this point, and they are still planning bus routes. They said they usually don't start this early, but with the new school in town and then McDougal possibly not being open, they are looking at it earlier, and they've addressed the need to have a transfer site in McKellar.
It doesn't really affect it. It was more curiosity, anyhow. So.
Councilor
Peckin?
Sounds like a good improvement. It does say the organization will maintain a minimum of $5 million in third-party comprehensive liability insurance. I'm just wondering if this is something that our insurance company might want to take a look at from a risk management point of view.
Yes, and they've forwarded the insurance documents provided by the consortium as well.
Councilor Hassan?
Yeah, over overall, I think it's a great spot to move it to from the West Road, but the one clause I see here, and I don't know if I agree with it or not, but there might be a reason for it, is to ensure smooth and consistent traffic flow. Bus drivers will be directed to enter the park via the north entrance and exit through the south. Yeah, pretty much okay, period. So that means no matter which direction they're coming from, they have to enter the north. I'm a little concerned about that coming from town. That's with the school bus, that driveway entrance is pretty gnarly to try to swing into there coming from town, where coming in the what we call south entrances seems so easy to do. And then the same with exiting out of the southbound one to go north, again, that's, it could probably be realigned, but again, that's a gnarly, I find it even my truck pulling out of there, it's gnarly to pull a right out of there because of the angle it's on. So yeah, I have concerns. Why that? Why not let them, if they're coming from the south, let them come in that southern entrance and exit out of the north? So
blame me for that one.
Oh, really?
Because I've been at the park a couple times and just cars, not buses, have missed that turn at the south entrance. They've gone right over the bank. Not thinking a long bus. Mm-hmm. If they're not very careful, they can go over that bank quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's a much smaller drop on the north entrance than the down on the south. That's quite a, and I my first question was, do we have to set up some guide rails there? Because a long bus, full-length bus turning there could easily overshoot the turn. And I know it's a more of a twist in the north, but there's less chance of an accident in the sense that if you go over there with a busload of kids, that's not going to be a good scene either. And coming out, you can see both directions quite well. If you're turning north again, you can see if anything's coming south, going out of the south entrance. So I was just looking at the, and I know it's tight up in the north, but I was looking at things that could happen that I've seen happen. And that was a concern. If we didn't put up guide rails, I'd be quite concerned about a bus turning in the south entrance. It's not as, I mean, it's certainly possible if you're paying attention, but if you make a slip, mm-hmm. as I've seen at least two people, one 2 years ago, right over the bank, and it had to be lifted out. But I guess firefighters were there too, and the public works people came over. So that was a concern of the south entrance with no guide rails.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. I'll even do that if I'm going to Minerva Park, or I change my sense. Think, well, I'll run into the park, have a look, see how it's looking, kind of thing. And it just seems to approach it quickly,
yeah.
That entrance, for some reason. But I still feel that the bus is trying to pull out of there to get north. They're going to have to go out into the oncoming lanes.
Right.
I just don't. So I don't know if we want that either. So.
Well, as I said, you have good sight lines.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, but short of actually putting up a barrier at our cost, I just don't feel safe with them pulling in the south entrance. Councilor Cracklin?
Well, so now you're bringing up a good point. Is it meeting the minimum width of a road requirement?
Well, that's an excellent point. And we if you start to get into the technicality of that, then you're going to have MTO involved too. So it's not just, I mean, you're off 124 provincial highway. You're not, it's not a municipal standard. So I just don't know how far we want to go with this. It could get pretty dicey there.
Well, I won't be in the bus, so whatever happens, could we leave it up to somebody else to make the decision on that then? So
I'm just trying to be proactive.
Has more of the professionalism in determining the best way to do that. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure our road super would be more qualified than us, or, you know, a recommendation from MTO, as long as it doesn't open some major mess.
Well, it will be opening.
Yeah.
No problem. You know the origin of that sort of thing.
Well, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
It's not even.
Councilor Zula.
Maybe we shouldn't be using
well,
it at all.
Can't we leave it up to Nipissing and Perry Sound them to decide if they disagree with what you're suggesting? Send it
they
through this. Send it through this way, and then see what they have to say.
They have an opinion on it. Sure, they're the ones driving the bus. So. You could even word it that. It's preferred. Preferred, yeah, that's all. And then they could still make up their own mind.
Yeah, they come back to us or
yeah.
say, well, I see that cause, but yeah, we've determined that's too long. But if they come back and say it's
yeah.
a problem, I'm sure we'll relook at it.
Certainly, if they did go in on the south side and did not make that corner, I would imagine that would be life threatening to
mm-hmm.
lots of people on the bus. So that's a big drop.
So is pulling out of there, going in the
mm-hmm.
other lanes, and a transport truck coming through McKellar Village as fast as they do sometimes,
mm-hmm.
not being able to stop. So, yes.
There's no easy answer.
No, there's always a risk kind of thing. So, and I'm fine with it either way, but if we can get more input on it. Some, but, yeah, like I say, just change that clause a little bit and we'll pass it. It's not worth the dragging our feet on.
Well, I think it is worth dragging our feet on it if it's a safety concern, just because I believe at McDougall School, when there is buses coming in and out, there's lights flashing on either end of the entrance, and that's an entrance with no, you know, perceptible safety issues that we're discussing here. Like, you know, although the Public Works Superintendent seems to indicate it can be adequately maintained for snow plowing and sanding, there's no mention here about the width of the road when it could be an issue in other situations.
Yeah, it's just coming up so quickly, I guess. It's unfortunate that MTO hadn't acted sooner and changed the speed limit like they're talking about doing. I don't know if it's happening this year or not. So the 50 wouldn't start right there, it would start back further. As you say, you still have to control it, people are still going to be speeding. And McDougall, I've seen accidents there at the school with buses coming and going and other people, and there was one truck right out into the snowbank. And so it can still happen there. And of course, they're still at 80 there. It's a safety zone, but it never reduces to 50. And ours is 50, but it starts right at entrance to Minerva Park. So if they can get the 50 moved back, that might help a bit too. And then the 70 warning that they're talking about. But I don't know when that's going to happen.
I think the main point is that we've done what we can to mitigate risk. And if we can show that, then
yeah,
that's an important point.
And I think I mentioned too, yes, I mean, if they okay it, consortium itself, if they investigate, maybe they have engineers who can look at it, I don't know. I mean, it's probably better than, you know, West Road there that they were doing on that little island there,
mm.
still on the provincial highway sort of thing. And that's the same sort of thing. I'm not sure how they pull in and out of there, whether they take one over the other, whether they go both directions.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, I don't know, again, with I'm fine with the way it is. That can be ironed out, though it might make think differently, but could it be worth the input from the owner of the bus company, who's probably maybe going to instruct the bus drivers to go in or out a certain way when they start? Because that could possibly happen. That he may say, oh no, you're going in a certain way or not. Well, if we pass that motion, obviously they have no choice. But
they do have someone come from the consortium to view the site and ensure safety. Another point would be that I don't believe full-size buses will be using that as the site. It'll just be the shorter buses, so you won't have the length.
To me, makes a fair difference.
Yeah,
sure.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that
before. I know like a full, you know, 50-seater to make that right-hand turn on the north entrance. I just see that being really awkward. And they'd be right to a dead stop, you know, holding traffic up while they're trying to maneuver. If it's small buses, I don't see a problem.
Well, can we have that confirmed? Because it doesn't say that here, and it's a transfer site. Usually they're changing from a small bus to a larger bus, so there's more students going into Perry's app.
Usually they come on the big bus, and the little bus picks them up there, and then takes them down Balsam or wherever.
They may not have that answer at this point, too, because, like I said, they're just figuring out the roads and the schedule, so depending on the number of kids, it'll be the shorter buses going out within the region, maybe one longer charter bus will be coming in, but it would just be the one. You won't see the long buses taking the kids actually home.
Yeah, because I think there's the short bus just has one route. The big bus comes down Center Road and goes to the thing and like goes there, and the kids get off and get on the shorter bus and go.
I'm not sure how many buses are in use, but I mean, on a typical day when I'm driving at that time, I see a minimum of one bus, even on Broadbent, one long bus, and two shorter ones, and they're not the same size either. But and that's just a very small area within McKellar, so I'd have to think that there's multiple long buses being used elsewhere in the community. But I don't know that. That's just a casual observation. So.
But yeah, as far as the other, the consortium, I think, would be talking to the owners of the bus. They must have an agreement. So I don't know sure whether we want to get into the bus owners, or whether we should deal with the consortium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that'd be good. And maybe because of the concerns that are being raised, it shouldn't be a 3-year contract. Maybe it should be a 1 and review it. I know you want some stability. That's what they'd be after as well.
And do we presently sand or salt the entrance in and out of Minerva?
That would be completed if it was a transfer site.
Yeah. Okay. But that would be a big deal too if you're coming in there in a bus and starting the slide. Yeah, that would be.
Well, by agreeing to all this, the onus is on the municipality, yes, to make it a safe site. So there is liability involved. And. As far as the, I know the actual public works yard is one of the last ones to be plowed or sanded, and Minerva Park quite often is left too while they do the main roads, so that would have to change, and I'm sure Tom is going to look at that change. We want to make sure that it is done on time. And my other concern too, but it doesn't seem that, I think it's alleviated other people parking in there. When you didn't think they'd have a problem, if there are other cars. Not that it happens that often, but I know in the winter it's not as many people park as they do in the summer. But you wouldn't want some obstacle for the bus to get in and out and turn around to wherever they have to do. But I don't know how you can patrol that and make sure there's nobody parking there. You've got signs up, but...
Well, I guess you could probably put sign up, no parking between...
Yeah.
On the, you know, the drop-off times. But I think if we send that forward with our concerns, and then they would come back. Like you said, somebody comes out and looks at the site to see, and then they may accept it or they may not.
Well, I think it's important that our insurance company sends risk management to just take a look, because we're taking on risk now that we didn't previously, and there it seems to be more than one issue of concern, so...
They wanted an answer right away, I guess, but...
Yeah, the sooner the better, just because they're planning their routes, and then if they have to use an alternative site, then they have to investigate that, so West Road would be used instead of Minerva.
I'm thinking of a deferral for what, we got 2 weeks?
Yeah, July 2nd.
To investigate some of those things that we're bringing up, I think it's probably prudent to do that. I don't want too many deferrals, but I mean, putting it out there as a, is this the resolution the way it reads, no matter what we change in it, the resolution reads at a 3-year term. We might be okay with that, but we're authorized to sign it. So we don't want a situation where we leave the table, we sign something that you haven't agreed to, we haven't investigated. So deferral would be the option as long as, and we're sort of in the driver's seat here, I would assume. I mean, we have to look after the ratepayers and the students involved, obviously. And so just to say a blanket yes without investigating, some investigation's been done, which is good. Maybe other questions have arisen. And I think the checking with the insurance company is a good step.
So another point, the snowmobile trail goes through there in the wintertime, does it?
Mm-hmm. And some people park there to unload their snowmobiles too, so
that's
there
true.
Is parking going on there.
And so
Now, like Deb says, there could be signs, or it's just gonna be made wide enough and make sure that everybody's single parking, so there's room up. There usually is lots of room. They do plow fairly wide. Now, I've always said we should maybe try to widen that parking lot even a little bit more if we could. But, yeah, so it's a good point. There's snowmobile trail going through.
So we have no control when snowmobiles are going through there?
The snowmobile club puts up stop and stop ahead signs. Same with crossing the highway there.
But
yeah, you wouldn't want anybody blocking that trail. It's kind of obvious, but maybe it's mostly snowmobilers that park there. They know enough not to block the trail off, kind of thing. But a bus is only going to be stopped there for, you know, what, 5 minutes at the most. If they did stop in front of the snowmobile trail, I'm sure it's not going to be the end of the world.
But what I'm thinking about now is the traffic of snowmobiles going through there. So you have no control what time and how many snowmobiles are going through that area.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of risk here, and we have to look at this a little further.
Maybe West Road isn't so bad after
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
And not that I would want to commit the township to, but we will be having another driveway over here and parking lot, I would imagine. But again, yeah, would it get filled up with the here would be out of the question, because obviously this parking lot's right filled for a bus to come in and transit and stuff kind of thing. But where the parking lot over there would be a no parking zone in the winter.
And there's always been that question. I haven't had it answered yet. West Road and that island that's sitting there, who actually owns the property between malls, I guess, and the island? Is that part of West Road? Is that, I don't know.
I know the highway property, MTO, they own a wide area in there.
They have control over it. Do they actually own it?
I think so. I think I've seen maps because we were wondering one time running the snowmobile trail out of Minerva and then over to West Road kind of thing, and we would have had to deal with MTO to do that, which sometimes some of the clubs find MTO a real nightmare. So they didn't cross that road, but luckily the township let us go straight across, which is more ideal. And Irwin, because that's
right.
Lettuce, so that opened that up. But yeah, that's a bit of, you'd have to get a map out and see
yeah.
Yeah, where they are. I would have almost guessed they're on MTO property where the bus
probably
stops and parks and does whatever they're doing. But yeah, if we have a lot of doubts about Minerva Park, maybe it's not the best suggestion going forward. They asked us, I take it, for them to have it as an option.
Well, they first inquired about West Road, but then determining ownership and that being MTO, then they asked if there was any other place that it could be done safer,
mm-hmm.
and Minerva Park was offered. And to know that the bus company and the consortium also has a lot of liability, so once they do a site visit, if they see it's unsafe, they're not going to go with it either, right? So
yeah, so as long as they're made aware of, like say, a snowmobile trail going across there, it's okay, but you know, kind of thing. We're probably not going to be able to control the parking all that well in there. You can put up signs, but it doesn't necessarily mean people are going to follow it. And you're not going to have a bus wait there for a half an hour until a tow truck comes along. So, yeah, it's the more you think about it, especially going 3 years. I see 1 year,
yeah,
like,
one
I'll
year.
Realize, okay, there is issues. Let's go back to West Road. So.
That's okay.
So the Student Transportation Services approached the township seeking a suitable transfer site in McKellar while planning their school bus route for the 2025 academic year. So historically, the traffic island at the intersection of West Road and Highway 124 has been used for this purpose. So they've been using that location for how many decades?
I'm not sure.
Probably a few.
Yeah, I don't know. It could have changed too with the demographics.
So, however, township staff recommended Minerva Park as a safer alternative to the loading and unloading of the students. So,
so would our staff want to take another look then? Staff is you and Tom, basically,
yes.
Caroline? Does anything we said here kind of raise concerns to you at all? Or?
Yeah, for sure, but and then putting my parent hat on as a kindergarten mom, I'm thinking that I would want my kid to be off at Minerva Park and not the Highway Island, because it is a 50, but people do not obey those speed limits, as we found out with those radar signs. So I would feel more comfortable as a parent having my child offloaded at Minerva Park prior instead of that highway, but we can definitely look into that and consult the insurance company to ensure that the township is covered through that wise.
Oh, your motion.
Defer is my motion, eh?
Pass, defer, defeat.
If we can defer for 2 weeks, and I'd like to, for Tom and Carly to discuss it a little further and realize, you know, maybe a little more thought. I hate to say that one, maybe put tons of thought into it, but with the input councils brought forward, maybe.
I don't think the bus company would, or the consortium would be not agreeable to a 1 year term. I think that's flexible. So if the township wanted to try it for a year and thought that there was too much risk, that they could change it back to another suitable location. In terms of the driveway entrances, that might be a can of worms with MTO, but perhaps Tom has some suggestions as to how we can improve them for the buses coming in and out. And then again, just checking with the insurance company to make sure that we're not taking on any more risk than we should be.
Mm-hmm. It could be, yeah.
Oh, yes, go ahead.
My only other concern with that is I know that it's going to be plowed and salted and sanded, but with that one grade there with a bus, I can see that bus get stuck there a lot. And then you have kids stuck on the bus trying to get to school, or it's just going up, right?
Is that the south entrance?
Yeah. It's such a grade that I don't even think, no matter how much you salt or sand, it's still going to be so soft that it's going to get, and it's so heavy. That was my concern.
And when you're stuck in a location like that, that has steep embankments on either side.
And if you're halfway out, and now you have a bus halfway out on the highway where they're coming down that hill,
probably.
As much as you know, I totally have faith in our public works to get it cleaned and cleared out, but I just don't think that, especially with the winter we just had, I think it would be hard to get in and out.
Well, you probably won't have to worry about the number of bus cancellations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was biting my tongue. You won't have to worry.
Yeah, they won't be running on any snowfall any more than 3 inches. No,
or if
normally
they
mention
it's going to snow.
That's right.
The second paragraph under analysis, you said, following the township suggestion, Nipissing Parish Student Transportation Services reviewed the proposed site at Minerva Park. Does that mean they came here and looked at it?
I have to confirm with Chuck, but he looked at the aerial mapping of it when we had the discussion. I'm unsure if he sent someone out yet, but he was sending someone out to look at the site.
Because, yeah, I think we should insist on that. Come here and do a on-site review, inspection, whatever you want to call it, because, yeah, the issues that Mary just raised and we've raised previously come into play. Right?
I think they just wanted to see if the township was agreeable to the new site prior to sending
enough,
someone out,
yeah.
Because if it wasn't going to happen, then they would just go to West Road.
It's kind of narrow, the south entrance, kind of narrow. I'd even like to see us widen it for our own events, because two vehicles meeting there, it's really squishy, eh? Or sometimes not possible. So
I think one option is that south entrance isn't used at all.
We'd have to get a
turnaround. So it's like, you know, then you have to turn around in there. So it just comes back to West Road Island is the being used for decades. So as a counselor, I'm not willing to take on this additional risk for something that has worked in one location for quite a few years.
What bus company is it that runs through here? Is it Bell? Mr. Bell, he's a fairly smart fellow. Like his opinion would mean something to me in a way, but, you know, that proposal, is he aware of it or not? If he isn't, looks at it, says, no. He may think, no, that's not something I would want my bus drivers to be doing.
So you're agreeable to a deferral and investigate some of these things?
Yeah, I would be.
Okay, enough information? Report T-2025-04, tax arrears status of the selected roll numbers as of May 31st, 2025, from Treasurer Roshan Katia for information purposes. Discussion? Councilor Ryan?
I'm curious. I mean, I'm not sure that I understand for sure what he's proposing for new accounts with real tax, but I know at ballpark anyhow that our arrears went up by basically $100,000 in the last year. We're in the neighborhood of $600,000, whereas last year we're in the neighborhood of $500,000, give or take. And it seems to me that we're being too conservative and not assigning more accounts in an attempt to collect that arrears amount. I mean, there's no way we're ever going to collect the whole thing, I understand that, but I think we should assign more accounts. I don't know how much is involved on Roshan's side to do that, but simplistically looking at it, I thought it was more like a one-time thing to assign the accounts and then they followed up and we had to pay bills. I get it, but I would think that I would like us to put a major dent in the increase of roughly $100,000 of arrears, and we should make some aggressive moves to do so, or at least assertive moves. Maybe aggressive is not the right word, but
I don't know which he's choosing, the ones that have the largest amount, I guess, as opposed to many that we saw before, and they're minuscule. I mean, as far as you're probably paying the company more than to get those collected, so that's what you have to look at, and I think that's why it's going after the major offenders. But maybe Carly has more.
All the fees that incurred are put back onto the ratepayers, so they have to pay their tax arrears plus the fees incurred by real tax. It's been really successful. We've located property owners that didn't know they had to pay taxes and that had outstanding arrears. It's been really productive. I don't believe the treasurer at this time is wanting to add any more accounts to this current year, but it has been successful, and I think he would like to add more for 2026. This was more just a report for information.
But the metrics that I would look for is how many accounts are there and what's the dollar value of them, and then what percentage are we going after, especially by dollar amount, because it seems to me that the higher the dollar value, the more likely we are to collect them, because if they've got that big tax bill like that, they've probably got a big property and probably have the means to pay it, and they either, or they simply don't, whether, I don't know why, but I'd like to see us, like I said, try and look after the increase that we've seen in the last year by assigning more accounts, and I don't know exactly how to do that, but some background stats on that, and there is background here, but it's still a very small number of the accounts that we're talking about, and I'm not talking about going after the petty amounts because I don't think it's worth it either, but certainly anything more than 2 years, I think we should be looking at where the dollars are and see if we can recover those. So
the treasurer can provide an updated list to council on tax arrears, and then if council wants to assign like the three highest or whatnot, then we can go from there.
Well, I'd like to see. I mean, if we went up by $100,000 worth of arrears, I don't know how many accounts that would be, but it's got to be 25 or 30. That's my guess. That's nothing more than a guess. But and so if that's true, I mean, and if the numbers are less fine, then we don't need to assign necessarily a lot more. But I'd like to see us try and recover the increase in arrears in 1 year.
It's hard to know how many we're talking about because those ones they did collect on, they were fairly high.
Yeah.
So you only need about 4 or 5 of those to make your 100,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So to say that they're 25 or 30, we don't know that.
No, I'm not making that number up, I admit. But I'm just saying that, I mean, we should be looking at it in a background context that makes sense of trying to recover, well, not just the increase, but trying to recover the previously outstanding amounts too. And I'm not trying to tell anybody how to do their job. I'd be curious if Roshan had an opinion as to how we could do that that would derive more revenue for it. I mean, we've got a lot of bills to pay. We've got a lot of roads to fix. And this is one way we can try and do it. So,
yeah, as long as we're not having him spend more time on reports than actually working on collecting the taxes,
But I'd be happy with a verbal presentation. I'm sure he knows all this stuff. And I'm not looking for that. Just a bigger picture of being more assertive with these instead of letting them lie for a number of years. So.
Yeah, well, probably this is why it would be good to have him here to talk about it. He's probably going by legislation as well. There's only so much you can do
see that one of them paid $22,000, that's
right.
Good money, so. But imagine if they didn't, we'd be 122 behind the eight ball, so.
Any further discussion on the report? Call the question, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 25-271, this is for 17.3, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskins. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby receives the accounts payable preliminary check run report for May 2025 from Treasurer Rorschach Garcia for information purposes. Discussion? Councilor Kecker.
Page 4, Cultural, McKellar Township Library, Advertising. Is that reimbursement from Historical Committee for Memories of Muskoka?
Yes.
Memories of Muskoka?
Did each member of the Historical Committee is able to get one of those books?
No, McKellar Memories.
Okay, it might have just been entered wrong.
Question, I don't know whether we know the answer yet or not, but page 15, what the township is spending for our bylaw enforcement officer, the courses, equipment, and now, and you've been talking to Whitestone, I guess, I think they have the same employee or same contract, how much are they paying? For these, I mean, they're getting somebody not fully trained, but certainly well trained. Are they paying anything to help cover the costs that we pay for?
My intention, the CAO of Whitestone and myself are going to work together to cover costs. So next time the bylaw enforcement officer needs clothing, then Whitestone can cover because we initially put out costs to outfit her. Same with courses and training. We've provided her with some courses and training, and then when she's looking for further education, that Whitestone can contribute as well. They also have their previous bylaw enforcement officer job shadowing, so that's a benefit to us as well.
Right. I'd like some of this to be retroactive, because we've been fighting for years with the Mance, and they won't pay anything, even though it's a joint charge. And I just don't want that to happen here, that we pay for all of the costs and then they benefit from it. I guess we're getting some work in kind from their previous bylaw enforcement officer, which is a good thing, I guess. But I'd just be concerned that it's all from moving forward, because we've already made some investment, and I would like to see them, you know, cover some of those costs that we embarked upon. We don't even know yet how it's going to work out, whether she can work in both townships and be successful, so we'll have to see how that goes. But I would hope her priority would be with us and not leave us and go just to Whitestone. So, Councilor Keck.
You know, the fact that their previous law enforcement officer is volunteering their time to provide some guidance and insight, he's volunteering that time. It has nothing to do with Whitestone has paid for anything of that. That's a volunteer effort on his behalf, and certainly there should be some cost sharing with courses and training, so that included not just the courses but the time that was paid for taking the courses.
Correct.
So absolutely there should be some cost sharing. They're benefiting from the resources the township has put into this.
As I say, we can't do anything. We know what jobs she takes, and she can take on many jobs as long as she's fulfilling her obligations to McKellar Township. But yeah, it would be nice if we could work together. The CBOs, I think they share. And of course, they were well trained already, I guess. I don't think there's any agreement there necessarily. They just go in to fill in for the other.
There is an agreement with them.
There's an agreement with that. But as far as the training and all that, we're starting out fresh with our bylaw enforcement, so I think it'd be good to, you know, at the ground level, get it straight as you're going to do, and what they're going to pay for as well. And I'd like it to be somewhat retroactive rather than from this point.
Whitestone and asked for 50% of the cost with her training and outfitting.
Yeah.
Everything going forward, but they're gonna ask for
for retro and then
also
going
for okay. Them. Yeah, the worst scenario is they don't go for the retro, but I would have to think they would agree with going forward 50%. Or certainly not fair.
Anything else on the check run? All the question then, all those prepared? None opposed, carried. To 19.1, resolution 25-272, moved by Councillor Ryan, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Whereas Bill 5 proposes to replace the Endangered Species Act, reduce environmental protections, and allow special economic zones that can override municipal planning authority. And whereas the Council of the Township of McKellar supports growth, but not at the expense of environmental integrity, indigenous rights, and local decision making. And whereas these changes could bypass municipal bylaws, reduce public consultation, threaten biodiversity. Now, therefore, be it resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar, number one, proposes provisions in Bill 5 that weaken environmental protections and undermine municipal authority. Number two, urges the province to support development in ways that respect sound planning, indigenous rights, and environmental responsibility. And three, requests full consultation with municipalities and indigenous communities before proceeding with Bill 5. Four, supports AML's recommendations, Association of Municipalities of Ontario, on protecting municipal autonomy and environmental safeguards, and further, that this resolution be sent to the Premier of Ontario, relevant ministers, and AML, Association of Municipalities of Ontario. Discussion? I know this is belated, the bill's already passed, but it still sends a message. Question then, all those in favor? Opposed?
I'll abstain.
Okay. This sounds like a report. No, I'm not asking for a recorded vote.
I don't need a recorded vote, but if anybody else wants to see my vote, I guess, they can ask for it.
Okay, the only thing is, in the record, it won't say abstain. It's just the pastor.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So if you want
just
to
pass,
vote,
fine. No, it's not that important. No.
Okay. So, call the question again. All those in favor? One abstaining. Carried. On to 19.2. Resolution 25-273, moved by Councillor Hassam, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the letter dated June the 9th, 2025 from Mr. Bill Hoddy, requesting an exemption from the road damage deposit in connection with a future building permit application for an accessory structure lost due to fire. And further, the Council directs staff to advise Mr. Hoddy that a road damage deposit will only be required if the value of the proposed construction exceeds $15,000. And further, confirm that the road damage deposit is fully refundable upon closure of the building permit, and further, that while Council expresses great sympathy for Mr. Hoddy's loss, does not wish to establish a precedent that could affect future applications, and therefore respectfully denies the request for exemption. Discussion? Councilor
Kekkonen? I think when you look at the road damage deposit 6.7, it says that the municipality shall be the sole judge of damages and for determining costs of repairs to be charged to municipal security. So it does give the township a little bit of autonomy into making this decision. And there's already an exemption for a large class of work that gets done on private properties that there is no road damage requirement required. Anyone doing any type of large-scale landscaping, making an improvement on your driveway, large trucks going in and out, excavation equipment loaded on floats going in and out, no road damage deposit required. So I would support an exemption for Mr. Hoddy because there's already a large class of work that gets done where there's no road damage deposit required, which could inflict any significant amount of damage on an entrance onto or off of a township road. So that's my position.
So where did you see this, Mike?
And is there any road damage deposit required for someone who's getting work done on their driveway or landscaping on the property?
Creating a new entrance.
No, new entrance.
No.
This is someone with
improvements.
With doing improvements on their current property.
No, because the entrance is existing, and the trigger for building permits is any permit over $15,000.
Right, so someone gets $100,000 worth of landscaping done on their property, an existing driveway. Mr. Heidi's not bringing any excavation equipment in, he's not bringing any cement trucks in, no dump trucks. There's going to be a few lumber trucks coming in, bringing some lumber to his property.
And it's existing.
It's an existing driveway that's been there 30 plus years and was set up so that it can take large trucks when he had a business running from his property.
And one thing I've seen through my years of being in the industry, and I cringed at times, and that's most of the damage would happen on sites I was on when they were trying to back into a driveway. You know, they'd have to jockey and turn their wheels while they're sitting there, and they chew off the edge of the asphalt or the township kind of thing. But with Mr. Hoddy's driveway, they won't have to back in. They can all drive in. So I just don't see there being a possibility of damage kind of thing. And then I feel a little bit for them, you know, the unfortunate circumstance that happened. That's not going to happen to too many people going forward. So as far as setting the precedence, I'm not too worried about it, but only I will vote in favor of the exemption because of that the situation. You know, sometimes your neighbors need a hand, you know. So that's how I kind of feel about it.
You said you'd vote in favor of that?
No, I'm going to vote against that motion of charging the $750.
Yeah, okay.
I feel it's a good reason for an exemption.
Now, how do you deal with the fact that it's refundable? That there, and Iowa Councilor Keckman said already, the township can still make a call on that, and they might not get $750 back. I'll just say precedent again on the checks that I've signed is that they're all refundable. So, Councilor Keckman.
I did have a chance to see Mr. Hardy a couple of weeks ago, and unfortunately, he's not in a financial position to have money flowing all over the place. He's very strapped for finances, trying to deal with a significant loss of all the equipment and years of investment into this one structure that he doesn't have excess cash flowing around that's going to be held up for possibly 1, 2, 3 years, however long it takes for to complete the project according to the permit.
I think the key there is it's an existing driveway. I think that's the key in it for me.
So this $750 refundable charge is for a new entrance, a new driveway? It doesn't say anything about one that exists. How is that actually worded?
For the building department, if a permitting fee for a new construction is over $15,000, then that triggers Chris to issue the road damage deposits. So when trucks coming in to put up the building, if there's damage caused to the road, then the township has a bit of money just in case damage is done.
Okay, so it's not just for new entrance. It tied into the value of the building.
What can you build for $15,000? 2 2x10s.
And it's kind of funny, ironic, because I just ran into it, is that deposit is required even if you